Okay, so the next chapter is chapter 20, and it's about power electronics. So now there will be some applications related to the transistors and the amplifier setups that we learned in the past chapters. So even though it says power electronics, it's more like power amplifiers and things like that. So it is mainly concentrating on bipolar transistors and bipolar devices, and we will go through also some a little bit more exotic devices, like four-layer devices, and introduce how they will be used, what they are, and how they can be used in power applications, and also describe and go a little bit deeper in power supplies and voltage regulators. So amplifiers. So far we've been kind of discussing just voltage amplification or current amplification, and how they can be analyzed and described for different circuits. But also I've been kind of touching on the fact that when we have these active amplifiers, like operational amplifier or these transistor, simple transistor amplifier circuits that we discussed last time, they don't only amplify the voltage signal, for example, but they also produce a power amplification. So we have a signal coming in, a voltage signal, for example, and also there is some current flowing in case of bipolar devices, and that product, voltage times current, is power. And then we have at the output, we have a certain voltage again, and depending, of course, on the output impedance and the load itself, where that signal is fed in, then we have also some current output. And in the power output, which is the voltage, output voltage and output current, the product of those, is something else that is fed into the input of the amplifier. And obviously this gained power is taken from the supply that we use and we have there in the circuit. So in case of a simple bipolar transistor amplifier, we had this VCC power supply or voltage supply. So the current is drawn from there. So if we now talk about power amplifiers, we are dealing with circuits that the main function is basically to deliver large amounts of power. In the previous discussion, we didn't deal with power. We were just dealing with mainly voltage for most parts. And now, talking about power amplifiers, we take that power concept as well. So obviously, these power amplifiers, we can produce them with the field effect transistors or bipolar transistors or using kind of special purpose devices like thyristors and triacs. We will discuss these thyristors and triacs later on in this chapter. The basic principles of power amplifiers are pretty similar what we have already discussed for amplifiers usually. So we would like to have a very low or relatively low output resistance in order to deliver high current at the output. So for that, we usually use a emitter follower, which doesn't produce a voltage gain itself, but it has really low output resistance. So if we want to produce voltage gain, we would have two stages with, where the output stage would be the emitter follower. But and in many cases, when we are dealing with power amplifiers, the load is not just resistive, but it can be all, it can have these inductive and capacitive elements. One example of a load for where we use power amplifiers is simply a loudspeaker. So when you have a audio amplifier at the output stage, you have the power amplifier that feeds current into a speaker, and usually the speaker, the basic principle of a speaker is that there is a magnet and then and a solenoid, so electrical magnet and static magnet, and with that current you produce in the solenoid, you produce electric field, magnetic field, which then displaces that permanent magnet, and you then the diaphragm in the loudspeaker produces a pressure wave, which you hear as a sound, and then you need a power amplifier in order to produce high currents and current changes. Of course, you want to change because you need to put the diaphragm into vibration. So that's the kind of the basic principle. So in that case, the power amplifier is not driving a simple resistive load, but there is this kind of inductive load that is somewhat different from what we've been discussing so far. But all in all, it needs high currents, and that's why we need to use low output resistance amplifier. So basic principle of the output stage, we can so as said, we don't always, or very rarely, we amplify, or the amplifiers are just a DC amplifier. So we would have a constant input voltage, and then we would have higher output voltage or current based on that. So usually it's some AC signal that we are working on. So like here, we have the load. In this case, now we have a capacitive load, where in some cases during this period, so when the input signal is going up, then it when we are dealing with this kind of emitter follower with the NPN transistor, then the current in this NPN transistor is increasing and is high when the input signal is high. So what we are doing, we source the load with current. So it's a current source for the load. But when we put the input signal low, then the current through this transistor is shut down or reduced dramatically. And then what happens is that in this kind of capacitive load, the charge from the capacitor is drawn through this emitter resistance. So now this amplifier works as a sink for the current. So this kind of circuit is good for sourcing the current. So the A part, the left-hand part, and that sequence is good in terms for the load for current, but for syncing, this configuration is not that good, because then we have this RC constant here that depending on how we have designed this may pose some problems, and it doesn't kind of so high frequencies and might have a problem. So the basic principle works, but it has some drawbacks. So we would need to kind of improve this. Then in order to make a good sync, we would need to use a PNP transistor. So in this case now, when we have an input signal high, then this PNP transistor is off, so there's no current flowing, and then we have current flowing from the supply to the load, so we are now sourcing the load. And in the other sequence, when we put input signal low, then we have current flowing from the load through the transistor, and now we are syncing the current. So now this configuration is good sync but bad current source, because now again we have this resistor here that kind of limits the current flow from the supply to the load. So this is why we need to use this kind of push-pull amplifier configuration, where we use an NPN transistor and PNP transistor for the load. And the load is taken from the emitter of both of these transistors. So now in this configuration, in ideal case, when you put the high input high, then the the PNP transistor, which is here below, is off, and the NPN transistor is on. So the current can flow from the plus supply to the load, and we are sourcing the load. And then when we put the input signal low, the T1 goes off and T2 goes on, and we are syncing. This amplifier is acting as a current sink. So now the current is flowing from the ground through the load, through the transistor 2 to the minus V voltage supply. So now this acts good in both ways, both sourcing and syncing. This is a good starting point for a power amplifier. So we are, of course, now from the power point of view, we are assuming that our supply here, both the V plus and V minus supplies, are ideal voltage supplies. So we don't have any resistors, internal resistors, so which would be limiting the current from there. So in that regard, we are not taking into account the limitations of those supplies. So just for this kind of the controlling part of the power. So it, basically, this configuration doesn't take into account the fact that if the load is really small, that there might be some current limitation from the supply, that it cannot produce really really high currents if the load goes really really low. But that's in reality, you need to take that into account in this analysis and this discussions that we are dealing here. We don't have to worry about that. Then another thing is that that this driving of this, because it depends on what is the V plus and V minus levels on themselves, that how to actually drive the base of these two transistors. So not necessarily it's possible, or it's works if you put the input signal, depending on what's the level of the input signal, so that if you are in the operating point of these transistors. So this is the kind of, you have to kind of bias them with the separate circuit and have this kind of common emitter amplifier like driving that input signal for this push-pull part. And so these two circuits here are identical. They are just drawn slightly different, just to illustrate the next step a little bit further. That so electrically, the potential for the base are same on the right side as they are on the left side. So they are just drawn a little bit different. So the problem here again, or the kind of in ideal case it works, but you need to remember that we have these PN junctions in the transistor. So T1 has this base to emitter here, which essentially have this 0.7 volt voltage drop, and the same goes with this PN junction. So if you go from the base of T1 and you go from base to the emitter, which is the emitter for both T1 and T2, and then you go from the emitter of T2 to the base of the T2, then you have 0.7 plus 0.7 volts, and on the other side you don't have anything. So then you have this kind of a slight problem there that you have this kind of a blind spot in voltage, that where this amplification is not working as we want. So what we need is, or well, what it does, this blind spot, basically it makes this kind of a distortion. This is called crossover distortion. Sorry about the crowded text, but basically the idea is illustrated at the bottom. So if we have on the input side, we have the voltage at the base going as a nice sinusoidal signal, the output, you can see here that there's this in the crossover. So when the signal, the input signal changes sign, then we have this small region where we don't have any input. So basically the output is kind of just flat. And that's where if you think about audio, if this would be some audio amplifier, then you would hear this as a distorted sound. So if you would have a nice clean, let's say 5 kilohertz signal, which would be just a monotonous kind of a sound, boring. But then if you would have this distortion, then it wouldn't be that nice anymore. So you would have some weird kind of a tune in that sound if you would listen to that. So how to get rid of that is in the simplest case is that you would add between the bases of these two transistors, you would add two PN junctions or two diodes, which would be where the voltage drop would correspond to the PN junctions of these base to emitter junctions for these two transistors. Then we could see that we have again the input signal, which is now defined at the middle of these two diodes. Then because of the kind of the compensation of voltages between this diode PN junction and the base to emitter PN junctions, then we kind of get rid of that distortion. So now the kind of the crossover would go more smoothly. Okay. One important consideration of designing, as always, for anything basically, is the efficiency. So if you design an amplifier, you would like to have it as efficient as possible. So efficiency in this case is defined as the ratio of the power dissipated in the load and the power delivered from the supply. So you, of course, 100% would be meaning that you don't spend or dissipate any power in the amplifier itself. So all the transistors, resistors, whatever inside there, it would be designed in a way that you there's no current from the supply kind of lost in those components. In reality, of course, you always have that. But depending on how you design, you can always improve it and get as high as in the order of 90% or so, depending on what kind of amplifier you have. So you always have that kind of excess heat that is produced in the amplifier itself. You cannot get rid of that. And obviously you would need to have some kind of heat control, thermal control. So heat sinks, cooling fans, or something on those lines. So again, if you're talking about audio amplifiers, you usually have some heat sinks inside there. Because cooling fans, you always have some sound. You cannot get rid of that. Heat sinks are quiet. So in audio amplifiers, you would like to have the amplifier itself quite quiet, so you don't mess up with your music or whatever you are amplifying it with. So the first if we classify the amplifiers, so if you now take back a few steps, and we can consider this common emitter with the feedback resistor, we can consider that as a power amplifier as well. So that is type A or class A amplifier. So this type of amplifier, as you remember, that we bias the transistor to the operating point with these two resistors on the base, and also these two resistors on the collector and emitter. So there is a certain biasing point. So in the normal state, when we don't have any input signal, there's already current flowing through the transistor. And obviously, there is kind of stable current or stable power dissipation all the time, even if we don't have any signal to amplify. And that's of course is bad for the efficiency. But of course, for distortion, it's good. So we have kind of a compromise of distortion and efficiency. So if you want to have low distortion, you usually it means that you have a little bit poorer efficiency. So class A is basically the classification goes that the active device conducts for the complete cycle of the input signal. So we have one cycle here, one period, and the active device here, it never closes. So it's always open during that time. And that's the case in this common emitter amplifier. So class B is the second one. And in class B, the active device is inside the amplifier conduct only half of the complete cycle of the input signal. So in this case, if you look at here, we have the full sinusoidal one period in the input, then at the output, T1 conducts at the positive cycle or the positive signal voltages, and T2 for the negative ones. And with this kind of system, we can get up to about 80% of efficiency if we assume a kind of ideal transistor operation. So we assume that these both of these are kind of identical in terms of their characteristics, and we don't have any or very little, or well, in ideal case, all the resistors inside are zero, and so on. So then we have that 78% of efficiency. In real life, it's of course somewhat lower. But anyhow, we have that's class B. So class AB is kind of a halfway of these two amplifier classes. So if we add another diode in this push-pull configuration, then we add the current through the transistors doesn't close exactly when the other one is opening, but they are open, slightly open during the other. So the main operation for NPN transistor is when the input signal is high, but still it doesn't close fully when the input signal goes low. And this gives us the kind of the transition between these two regions to overlap. And of course it makes the distortion lower, but again the efficiency gets also lower. So lower distortion is what we want, and high efficiency. But now with this kind of setup, the efficiency goes down. But the efficiency is still better than for the class A amplifier. So in this class AB amplifier, it's the active devices conduct more than 50%, but less than 100%. So class A was that the active devices conduct 100% of the cycle, and class AB is below 100, but still more than 50, which 50 was for the class B. So those are the kind of the classification limits. Definitions. But then we have also class C, which by definition is that the active device conducts less than half of the cycle. So it's less than 50%. And these type of so these are not good for audio. And where you want to preserve the integrity of the signal, but because the distortion is really high, but you can use this for just deliver power, so for motors and radio transmitters and so these kind of things. So radio transmitter is not meaning that you are with this, you are not producing the audio signal itself, but just to produce the transmission signal where you need. So you modulate the signal, the information into this high power, this distorted signal. But that's another story. We are not going into details for that. And then yet another classification or class for amplifiers is class D. And here we simply have on and off. So there's no resembles of if you have sinusoidal signaling, there's nothing. Only thing is the frequency that resembles from the input signal, but otherwise it's the amplifier is either on or off, so it kind of just hits to the limit immediately or almost immediately and then goes off. So for these type of amplifiers, the efficiency is very high. So if you basically we are having a switch that is on or off, and when it's on, we take the power and we put the power to the load, and then we turn it off, and there's no current flowing through the switch anywhere, and we are not kind of dissipating energy during that time. And the real devices, so MOSFETs and bipolar transistors, also they are pretty good switches, so you can make these with good high efficiency. So these would be controlling motors and those kind of things where the distortion is not a requirement. Okay, basically it's just same discussion that I already gave you about class A, that it has low distortion, but consumes or dissipates a lot of power. So where to use these are, for example, high performance audio amplifiers, where you want to have a really, really low distortion, and you don't mind about if the amplifier gets hot, you just put some heat sinks and get rid of the heat some other way, and you don't mind if you lose a little bit more electricity as long as the sound is good. Class B, so now we go into a little bit more details about that, this. And so in class B, the quiescent current is zero. So when the bias is or the input signal is, we don't have any input signal, we don't have any current flowing through in ideal case, at least. Of course, there are always some leakage currents as anywhere, but it's so small that you don't have to worry about. So if we now think about this push-pull amplifier that was described earlier, we would think this as class B, from the starting point, but however, this in reality, if we really look into this, that it's actually class C, because we had this dead band or this blind spot in this crossover. So neither of these transistors conduct 50% of the time because of this dBe volts difference. We have this crossover distortion there, but we can get rid of it as we discussed. Either we use it this way, where we kind of take a symmetrically input signal through a capacitor first of all. Then we have this biasing circuit where we have these diodes that compensate the p-n junctions of the transistor BE base to emitter junctions. And we kind of get rid of the distortion. Or we do it this way, where we have this common emitter input states, and again, these diodes. But the thing is that the current passing through an output resistor is much greater. So we have high currents flowing here, which means that that this VBE in the transistors, they are somewhat lower No, it's somewhat higher than the on the base side, because the currents in the base side are not that great. So if the p-n junction of the diode is identical to the p-n junction of the base to emitter, then the current, because the currents are not at the same level, so there's some difference in the VPE. So in order to kind of compensate that and get rid of that, we need to do some tricks. And of course, also other thing, even if they would be kind of the same, or if you would make them from the discrete devices, you remember that there's always some variability in the characteristics and the parameters of the devices. So the VPE and the current to voltage characteristics of these diodes and transistors are not always kind of identical, even if you kind of consider them as identical. So temperature and part-to-part variations, all these things kind of play a role. And so it's not just the 0.7 volt in reality. In the analysis, you can kind of get to the ballpark, but then in reality, you always have some crossover distortion still remaining. And how to get rid of it is that you, in the simplest case, you add a resistor here, which in principle, it adds a little bit more voltage drop from the base to base. So the diodes are 0.7 volt roughly, but not exactly. And VPE voltages are 0.7 volt, but not exactly. And there's some mismatch between those two p-n junction voltage drops. And with this resistor, you can tune it so that it's exactly from the base of the T1 to base of T2. Either way you go through the emitter or you go through these diodes and the resistor, the voltage drop is equal. So this way you can tune it. And for true class B operation, you need to tune this R bias here so that it's in the limit, so that when the other one is turning on, the other one is turning off immediately at the same point. Then you are having a true class B operation. So then the quiescent current for this device is zero. So you never have any current flowing through in the DC states. Only when you have input signal that goes slightly up, then you have current flowing, or slightly down, and you can you're sourcing at when you go high, and sinking the current when you are going low in the input. So it's really delicate tuning, but you can basically do it. And the same circuit can be used to produce a class AB. So now with this resistor, you can go slightly higher. So you can kind of have an overlap between the quiescent, or the when the other one is starting turning on the other transistor, the other transistor doesn't turn off totally. So then you have some overlap, which improves the distortion, reduces the distortion quite dramatically, but then it reduces the efficiency as well. So again, audio amplifiers would be one place to use these, where you want to have a low distortion. And this way you can still save some power, so you don't need to have that heavy heat sinks in order to use this, because the quiescent power is not that high as in the class A case. Then the stability of the conditions the same way that we had in the kind of the one transistor amplifiers. Also for this, we can stabilize the quiescent current with this adding a emitter resistance for both of these transistors. And then we need to use this R bias in order to compensate that drop that we have here. So again, we need to have the base-to-base voltage from T1 to T2 to have kind of compensated with this R bias. But now we have for T1 with this RE, we can the biasing of this is getting compensated or under control with this RE, similar way with what we had in the previous analysis in the previous chapter. So it's no longer dependent so heavily on the transistor itself, but on this RE. So if we add this RE, it of course it reduces the amplification, as you remember. But then in order to kind of compensate that, we could use these Darlington transistors, which have really high gain on their own. So here we have now two transistors, T1, T3, NPN transistor, and on the PNP side, we have two PNP transistors, T2 and T4. But essentially, these would be a single device in a single package as this Darlington transistor. This way, we have a enough current gain from here to compensate the reduction of the gain from a single transistor. But then the problems rise, or kind of limitations, that if you use this Darlington transistor configuration for the push-pull side, is that now you have, instead of one PN junction from base to emitter, you have two PN junctions from the base to the output or the emitter side for both NPN and PNP. So that's why you need then four diodes in order to compensate those four PN junctions. And then you need this R bias in order to compensate these REs and the small difference on the PN junctions differences, because these PN junctions not necessarily have exactly the same voltage drop in reality. In order to get away from that, we could use this complementary Darlington transistor, where we have PNP and NPN transistors used, where we essentially have only one PN junction from base to emitter for the upper Darlington pair, and the same goes for the lower Darlington pair, that there is only one PN junction from the emitter to the base. So now we are back with this kind of situation. We are back to compensate with only two diodes. Still, we need this R bias and REs here to be compensated. But essentially, this we could consider this right-hand side very much the same way as what we had in the previous picture. So these two transistor Darlington pairs would act as a single transistor effectively. But they would be able to drive much more higher currents than a single NPN or PNP transistor. Then the kind of the problem is one problem is that this diode or diodes that you would need to kind of just put a diode or two diodes in series, and then a resistor that kind of this configuration, it can take somewhat space in the integrated circuits, because the whole thing would be made in an integrated circuit, not in a discrete part. So you are not taking three transistor and two diodes and four resistors and put them on a board and make an amplifier. You would make them in an integrated circuit where you have all these transistors and diodes and some of the resistors already embedded in a silicon wafer, and that would be your amplifier. And then, of course, you would like to get rid of these two diodes and this also this resistor to have more control. So why not, if you're already making transistors, why not make yet another transistor where you would have that you would control? And then there is this kind of a trick that you can make that essentially, if you make a configuration for a transistor like this on the left side, so you put from collector to the base, you put one resistor, and from the base to emitter, you put a second resistor. And how this would look like in if you consider the currents and voltages and so on, in the end, you find out that if you go from collector to emitter, and you think that what is the voltage division of these two based from collector to emitter, so VCE is divided so that the VBE is simply, you can get from the VBE from the collector to emitter voltage and the ratio of these two resistors. Because if we assume that the collector current that flows through the collector and the emitter is much, much higher than the base current. So the base current that is flowing from starts from the collector and goes through the R1 resistor, and then in this node there's a crossroad that one portion of the current goes to the base and one portion goes to the through the R2 resistor to the emitter. But if we now consider that this base current here is much, much lower than the current in total current here, then we can assume this thing here. And from here we get that actually this VCE effectively is multiplied. So if the biasing is correct, so that the PN junction is forward biased, so there is some current flowing and we are roughly 0.7 volts in the ballpark of 0.7 volts for the VBE, then the VCE is effectively R1 plus R2 divided by R2. And what it does is that we can multiply the base to emitter voltage for this single transistor to some values. So now we can tune again with the resistor, we can tune the voltage drop from here to here. And effectively we can tune it to match the voltage drop when we go from the base to emitter through the emitter resistor of one, and then through the emitter resistor of the second one, and the base to emitter voltage for the second one. So now we have kind of a more sophisticated way of doing that compensation. And we could have this so that this actually this R1 would be an external resistor and everything else would be internal for that amplifier. So there would be a tunable resistor outside that you can tune yourself to find out the best operating point and best distortion and so on. Okay, then some words of designing the integration. So as said earlier, that the transistors and diodes, those are the ones that you would prefer to use when you do an integrated circuit. The process is so that you dope. So you start off with a silicon wafer, so plain silicon. Usually it's lightly doped P-type silicon. So you have a little bit more holes there than electrons for carriers, but not much. And then you start adding, you have a mask and through which you implant different regions with different dopants. And of course you can make a resistor with that way, but it's first of all it requires somewhat more space, so it's not to make a resistor in silicon. It takes somewhat more space than if you would make a transistor or a diode. So of course you want to save space as much as possible, and if you can avoid using too much space, then you want to do it that way. So what is usually in integrated circuits, you would avoid to make a resistor just as a resistor, whereas you would effectively you can use a transistor or a diode, you can use that effectively as a resistor. Certain point of the operating, so the current voltage curve of each of them, they act as a resistor. So they have some linearity in a small region. And depending on how you design it, you can do it. So for example, in this common emitter or common source amplifier circuits, you have this RC collector resistor or the drain resistor. You would like to get rid of them one way or another in order to get out of to manufacture that circuit better and have out of it would be easier to make. And one way would be you just add a diodes there, which would effectively, depending on where you are, but if you otherwise the rest of the design sets the operating point correctly, then for some input signals and some output range, this configuration would act as a resistor and it would be fine. Or you could use a current mirror or constant current source, which again acts effectively as a resistor, high resistor to be exact, because remember that for a current source, the internal effectively a current source has high resistance. So in this kind of configuration, you could get high amplification, because the amplification of common emitter circuit is the transconductance of this transistor times the RC resistor. And in this case, when we have the current mirror here, the RC resistor is effectively the resistor or the impedance of this system, which is high number. So we have a high amplification or high gain for this amplifier. And for MOSFET case, we could use, like we discussed already in the MOSFET chapter, that we could make or use transistor in this kind of configuration, where this transistor effectively looks like a a resistor, which is not exactly linear, but it's for a small portion of the IV characteristic, we can consider it as linear. So again, getting rid of just a plain resistor and using the same process as we would use for the other active parts of the circuit. Okay, differential amplifier that we were discussing. This is already kind of a teaser for the next chapter where we discuss about the internal things of operational amplifiers. So differential amplifier, we had the kind of the long tail pair description and configuration where we have two transistors. The input of one is the input of the amplifier, the one input, and the base of the other one is the second input. And then the output can be taken from here so that we basically bias the system with this current mirror so that that these currents are equal. And then we have the current mirror also in the emitter, which acts also or determines on its own partially the biasing point of the whole system. And the thing is that now, depending on the difference of these two, then we have the difference, the current at to the output of this differential amplifier is determined by the difference of these two voltage signals. So now we have voltage to current amplifier basically, and it's a differential amplifier. Basic principle of an operational amplifier. The first, the input states of the of a operational amplifier is more or less can be made like this. Okay, then some other devices to describe for power, controlling power. So four layer devices. So far we've been talking about NPN and PNP transistors, which were three layer devices. And so even though these transistors, they are quite good switches, but they have some limitations when we have really high currents and at high voltages. And for these kind of situations and applications, it has been developed these kind of four layer devices. They are not exactly transistors, but they have quite much in common for bipolar transistors. And let's look at them. So first of them is so-called thyristor. So this thyristor has an PNPN structure. And it has three terminals. It has an anode, a cathode, and a gate. So this is the terminology to use for a thyristor. The structure has quite striking resemblance of a transistor, or kind of an interleaving transistor. So they're kind of PNP and then you have NPN, and it's kind of hard to say that it's one or the other, but it's basically it's neither, but there is some cool features or useful features for this. So we have this from the gate to the cathode is a PN junction. So this PN junction here plays a key role in this system. So let's see how this thing works. And the symbol for this thyristor is this kind of thing. So you have this diode symbol in here, and then you have the gate going to the cathode of a diode, but then there's something else and it's just a diode inside. So we could think of it as two transistors. The operation from the operating point of view, we could kind of break it into two transistors. So PNP and NPN transistors. The anode is at the emitter of the PNP transistor, and the gate would be the collector of that that PNP, but also at the base of NPN transistor. And then the collector of NPN transistor, so T2, is the base for the PNP transistor for T1. And then the cathode would be the emitter of the second transistor. So if we now think how this thing would work, that if we now turn on T2, how we turn it on, we put high voltage to the gate, so to this PN junction. So what we have is that this PN junction starts to, there's current flowing to the PN junction. It means that there is some current from the collector of T2, which makes there's current in the base of T1, which makes that this T1 starts to, it opens, and then there is current from the emitter to the collector of T1, which then kind of, and then it starts to kind of maintain itself. Even though we would turn on or turn off the gate signal, this thing would then maintain itself, and there would be current flowing from the anode to cathode, regardless of what's the gate signal. But it will remain only until so if the current from A to C, or the voltage between A to C, goes to zero, then it turns off. And then even though you would have again voltage increase from A to C, so the potential at A would start going higher, this is off as long as we keep the gate signal off. So now we have a this kind of device that we can trigger whenever we want. So we have some AC signal from A to C, so anode to cathode, the potential, there's a sinusoidal signal, for example, and then we would have a control signal that we would trigger every now and then and start pulling current through the system and to the load wherever we are taking it. And it would not, and then ever whenever this sinusoidal signal would go down and to zero, then it would turn off, and it would not turn on again before we assay and we trigger it again. So here's a kind of illustration how it would look like. So we would have an AC supply, so it would be a sinusoidal signal like this. And we have the thyristor in series with our resistive load. And then we have this trigger, this gate current here. And we say that, okay, at this point in time, we trigger it. So we put some current to the gate and trigger it like this. And then what it does is that it triggers this thyristor and lets the current flow through from the supply to the load until we hit the supply goes to zero and to the negative. At the negative side, there's nothing. And again, when it goes positive again, it doesn't start to supply the load with current until we hit the trigger again. So this way you can control the power from 0 to 50% of the full power. So you only take the positive positive side. And so if you trigger it immediately when this gets above zero and you hit the trigger, then you would take all the positive sides of this signal. So it would be kind of rectified signal in that case. But then you would have also the possibility of going that you would only take right before it goes to zero, and so you have control when with this trigger signal. But of course, then you lose this part of the power that you cannot use. So the negative cycle is out of control or out of reach. But of course, if you want to have 0 to 100%, then you would have back to back of these two systems. So two thyristors. So one is taking care of the positive cycle, and one is taking care of the negative signals of the cycle. And what you need here is typically you need some. So you have the pulse circuitry, which is usually some low power, low voltage circuitry, so 5 volts, so some kind of a transistor to transistor logic operating at some volts. So, and the supplies are some hundreds of volts or something. So you need some isolation, and what is usually used is this kind of opto isolation that you. The potentials are isolated, so you can have the pulse circuitry working at 5 volts of supply, and then the AC supply can be 300 volts at maximum. Then you don't have to worry about that there would be some high voltages at the pulse circuitry that would break it. So this is one way of doing that. Then another device is so-called triac, which resembles of bidirectional thyristor. So now we have kind of two thyristors together, and like pointing both directions. And again, we need a gate signal to fire it up. And so now we can have with this triac, we can essentially make the same behavior that what we had, these two thyristors. We could just make it in one triac. So it would take care of both ways of the current. And then we have this so-called diac. So diac is something that is, it has its own a certain threshold voltage so that it remains off states to certain level, and then at some point it kind of fires on its own and it goes both ways. So we will look into how it looks like. So the triac, the physical construction of a triac is something like this. So you have two thyristors, kind of not mirror image, but kind of one is pointing one way and the other one is the other way. And then you have the gate is connected to the P region of the other one and N region for the second one. And with this, you can now take care of this triggering or firing of the conduction from through this system with one gate. And a diac is the voltage, current to voltage characteristics of a diac look something like this. So you have very little or basically negligible current flowing through it, and then at some point it kind of it's a diode. Like if you think about diode, it kind of there's only very low currents at until some voltage point, and then it starts to conduct. However, in a diode, it's the construction and then the material properties and so on, they don't allow really high currents to flow. But in this kind of dyak configuration, it can be done so that it kind of fires itself. So at some point of voltage, it kind of collapses and it can take a lot of current through it. So basically the resistance of that thing goes to near to zero, and there is practically all the current that is flow can go through it just goes through it. Of course, there are some limitations for power, that it gets hot, obviously, but usually it can be made so that it can draw and drive high power. So, and it works both ways, so it's kind of a symmetric thing. So if you go to positive voltages, at some point it kind of collapses and there's a lot of current flowing through, and the same goes to the negative side, that at more or less the same voltage at negative side triggers it, and then you have all the current that can flow through it. And here's an example of how to use this these two, so dyak and triac, in a dimmer for lamps. So we have a supply which is 325 volts of amplitude, 50 hertz. So that's basically the supply that we get from the power outlet of it in the wall. So, and then we have the dyak and the triac here, which are controlled by these R2, R3, and the capacitor C1. And here is our basically our lamp. So now it's just a 50 ohm load that is illustrated here, but it might as well be just a simple lamp here. So the AC signal that is taken from here is going like this. So that's a 50 hertz, 325 volts. And then there's two different resistor values here. So this would be the dimmer. So that would be the knob that you turn and change the resistor of this R3. And then you would change the brightness of the lamp. So how much current and how much power in average this load is taking. And the thing is that if you think about the light bulb, all the light bulbs, if you connect them directly to the main, so 230 RMS voltage. So the RMS is 50 hertz in Finland. So basically the current flowing through a light bulb is going up and down all the time. And there is this sinusoidal of 50 hertz. But the thing is that the light bulb, when it's lit, so there is this coil of tungsten that is lit, even though you every now and then the current is at zero, so when the voltage is zero, it takes some time to cool down, and it doesn't get cooled down before it again takes more voltage and more power. So it kind of, if you would take some photo sensitive device which would be fast, and you would measure the fluctuation of light from a light bulb, you would see this 50 hertz signal in a dimming of that bulb. So that's why, because of this slowness of the light bulb, that it doesn't go it if it would be 50 hertz and it would be going on and off in that frequency, then it would hurt your eyes and it would not feel really good looking at those light bulbs. And because 50 hertz is something that you already start to see with your eyes, and it would would not be good. However, with coming back to this issue, so when we have this R3, so we have this voltage change from this point to this point going on all the time. But then we have this triac here that doesn't allow the current to flow through the load if we haven't triggered that this triac. And then we have this diac here that kind of acts as a control for this triac. So when this voltage across these two resistors and this capacitor is not enough, then there's no current through this diac and not to the gate, and it doesn't fire this triac. But then at some point, depending on the resistor value, it gets high enough, and then this diac will fire, so current will start flowing through it, and it will go through this triac, and then it will start flowing through this load. And that what happens is illustrated here, that this there in voltage at there in is over here, and D out is over here. So the difference between these two is given in this value. So it goes high. At this point, this diac gets to that flaring point, and then it drops, and that's when it triggers. So now at that point, there's current flowing through this diac, and it will go through this gate, and it will fire the triac here, and it means that the current through the load goes up, and then it goes down along this line, and when it reaches zero, it turns off this diac, and next time it will fire when this diac here fires again. So here's the point when there's enough voltage difference between D in and D out that it will fire this one, and it will fire again, and it will go here, and then, and now we have the blue one is when we have high resistor here, that it takes some more time to fire it, and there is dimmer light, and then when we have lower resistor here, it fires up more quickly. So already in the beginning, it fires, and the load current is getting closer and closer to the full cycle of this. So when we would go to really low values, we would be very close to 100% of brightness. So that's kind of the basic principle. Okay, then voltage supplies and regulators, we have touched upon this already. So we had these rectifiers, we had this bridge configuration. So if you have an AC supply, a transformer that transforms the voltage difference, so voltage amplitude to some other voltage amplitude, then we might have more current on the right side. If you lower the voltage, we lower the voltage and increase the current. However, then we have this rectifier circuit that kind of rectifies the signal to close to a DC signal. It's not a DC yet, at least full DC. It has some DC component into it, but then you have this ripple that we were discussing about earlier, when we have this capacitor and the load. But then this ripple is something that many times one would like to get rid of it, and of course you can reduce it by just increasing the capacitor. But then of course the problem comes when you turn this thing on, it will take more and more time in order to kind of get to that level of if you have really enormous capacitor here, and it would not be practical if you want to have a really steady signal out. What comes to the eight is using voltage regulators. So I see integrated circuits with transistors and diodes and such that would take this signal with some ripple, and then it would just be flat or very, very close to much, much more flat signal that was in the original. And what are these voltage regulators? A simple regulator would be something like this. So we already had this this thing introduced earlier with the Zener diode and a transistor. And if we would now make it a little bit more sophisticated, we would have a Zener diode, two transistors in this kind of configuration. And it looks a little bit scary to start with, but if you start looking at how it behaves, you basically just take from the output side, you consider that this R3 and R4 and the voltage division here. And so what's the point of VP? So you can consider that as a simple voltage division with R4 and R3 from V out. And again, you consider this base current here much, much slower than the current that is flowing here in general. So then you can make this assumption or calculate. On the other hand, from VP, you have this base to emitter voltage for that transistor 2, so about 0.7 volts here. And then you have this Zener diode voltage over here. And it's kept at that voltage through this resistor, basically kind of taking care of that it's always at that voltage. So of course you need this VI needs to be higher than the Zener voltage in order to kind of keep that position, so it cannot be lower. But it can go somewhat higher, and it's still be there. And even if you have some ripple, so you would have VI that has this ripple and it's not steady, this thing takes care of that ripple will take it's taken out. And if you now go through this kind of simple estimation of what is the output voltage. So the output voltage is dependent on these two resistors, R3 and R4, the Zener diode voltage and 0.7 volts, which is this PN junction here. So that's in simplicity how this voltage regulator works. Then we have switch mode power supplies. So if we have an unregulated input signal, the one that we have, for example, we have some ripple there, and then we have some sort of averaging circuit and a switch that goes on and off depending on what we want. So we could make from some DC or close to DC supply. With this kind of setup, we could average and have a regulated signal out, and we could control the level of that voltage. So if we put that always on, then we have the output is pretty much the same as the input signal. But if we would kind of switch on and off with a certain certain on-off ratio, then with the averaging circuit would take the average voltage of that pulse signal, and then the output would be somewhat less, but it would be DC yet. So we, again, you could have with this kind of pulse width modulated approach, you can control the level of the output voltage and the supply. So in the simplest case, the averaging circuit would look something like this. So you have a diode, you have the coil, and then a capacitor. And then you have this switch. Of course, this switch would need to be a transistor, for example, that would be controlled on and off. So in the simplest case, this would be a averaging circuit. But usually you would need some more sophistication for that. So here is the basic, the core of the averaging circuit. So this LC averaging circuit with diode, but then you have this the regulation part over here that takes care of the regulation so that it will be, remain a more or less constant level at the output. And here you have R1, R2 that controls the level of output signal. And also it kind of takes care of the duty cycle. So how this thing is controlled on and off. So it's kind of a feedback for this on and off, depending on what level you require and want at the output. So now we have this. So basically this thing takes care of that this VF and VZ should be equal. So if there are some difference between those two. So if VZ is higher than VF, then we have positive here. So it means that it will put this on. So we have voltage and current flowing from here and to the output. So the output would try to go up, and it would then increase this VF in order to meet this requirement so that this will go down again. So open this. And with this feedback, it kind of automatically keeps this VZ and VF in balance and regulates the output accordingly. So basically you can, with this R1 and R2, so either one, it's not shown here which one is the controlled one, so which one is kind of the tunables that you tune. But in simplicity, it's more or less the output is controlled by those two R1 and R2 resistors. And the VZ is now also determining that output voltage level. Okay, the key points for this chapter, that power amplifiers are meant to be for those kind of applications where you need a large amount of power. Usually it means that you need a large amount of current into the load. Audio amplifiers, controlling motors and those kind of things. And bipolar circuits, they usually have this kind of emitter follower circuit used for these purposes. And many of the power amplifiers, they use this push-pull arrangement, because then you have this two transistors that either one is sourcing and one is sinking, and it's more efficient to use that way. And we had this five categories or five classes of amplifiers. So class A, was the one that has the poorest efficiency, but it has basically the best distortion behavior, so less, the least amount of distortion. Then we had class B, which has this, in the simplest case, it has relatively good efficiency, but then there is this risk of distortion. You have to be really, really careful of tuning it to have this low crossover distortion. Class C, you have more and more distortion, but better and better efficiency. And then there was in the middle, there was this class AB, which was kind of overlapping of this. So there was some more quiescent current, so less efficiency than just class B, but still better than class A. And class D was just the practically on and off type of amplifier or switch. Then we had these special purpose devices like thyristors and triacs in order to kind of have the switching for high power applications. So transistors can be used for them, but usually you have some limitations to use them, so that they are reliable and they don't break. And not always meant for driving high currents. So in the long run, they can wear out more easily than this kind of special purpose device. And then transformers, some rectification, and then some few transistors. You can make a regulator and make kind of controlled voltage supply, which is in a steady level of without any ripples. So that's how you can, what we were discussed in the last few slides. So that was that chapter, and we will start next time about this. So taking parts of the past few chapters about the transistors and now the power amplifiers and amplifiers in general and other stuff that we like, the current sources. And so this will be a relatively short chapter, this operational amplifier circuitries, just to illustrate the complexity, in a way, the complexity of the device, but still they are rather simple construction, like pieces, which we already know, but they are just put together and make it a little more complex. So let's see on Wednesday on that. Has there arisen any questions for this chapter? The previous chapter 20. Okay, if not, then I thank you and we will see you on Wednesday.